Good evening. Just for the record, this is what we've called Module 22, Wisdom Through the Three Jhanas. And the title of this particular talk is Love. And that is the title of a talk in this book. And of course, we have other copies. I don't know if they're paginated the same, but they have a different cover. So Module 22 is based on this book, The Myth of Freedom and the Way of Meditation by Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche. Love is the title of the chapter. There's another chapter assigned as reading called The Eightfold Path. And for those who have the book, and I see quite a few of them here actually, I think it's very worthwhile looking at it, and you may bring it up if you wish. But instead of that, when we come to talk about path, I'm going to use a more compact form, which we are very familiar with, which is the four dharmas of Gampopa, because that is a powerful presentation of path. So I'm very happy to have the opportunity to be here and open the discussion about love. And this talk, which you see as a chapter here, is actually somewhat excerpted from a longer talk, and it was originally entitled Sex. And within about the first few seconds, the author, Chogyam Trungpa Rinpoche, said, well, it's really about love. And a little while later, it turns out that it's really about passion. And that's very interesting. Anyway, the talk itself gives an amazing perspective on relationships and how relationships succeed and how they fail. And it's just immensely practical. It's not theory, it's just real practical down-to-earth stuff. And if we are open enough to accept an invitation, we even have an opportunity to flash on the cosmic union of the feminine and masculine principle that is within each of us. And that's quite amazing, it's delightful, it's relaxing, and it's up to us if we can actually do that. We always present talks based upon the three jhanas. Everyone's heard about the three jhanas, right? We have the Hinayana, which is our foundation, our basic study of how we can attain liberation. We have the Mahayana, which is going beyond that, experiencing emptiness, and giving up our own liberation in order to liberate all sentient beings. And for example, our study of Lojong is within the Mahayana. And then there's the Vajrayana, or indestructible jhana. And the Vajrayana is beyond any notion of self and other altogether, and we'll have a bit more to say about that. Well, Joseph opened up this discussion a little while ago by saying, he said, well, I'm just going to let the beans out of the bag right now.
I didn't say that.
What did you say?
Suffer less.
Okay. I thought I heard that. He talked about the dualistic barrier, and he proclaimed that confusion dawns as wisdom. And that was letting the beans out of the bag, mm-hmm. I think.
Odd expression.
Obviously, yes. Okay. And he talked about the lion.
It's like the balloon flying through the air.
Okay.
Yeah. I let go of the balloon. So it started moving around.
And the lion's roar is the proclamation that any state of mind we have is workable and can be used in the path of liberation. And then Erica gave a talk on negativity, and more than that, negative negativity, which is the negativity getting too conscious of itself, and the importance of cutting through that, stamping on it, destroying the negative negativity with the, what do we call that? The sword of Manjushri. You have an image of that sword?
Double-bladed, right?
What?
It's the double-bladed sword.
Yes, it's a double-bladed sword. And it doesn't, you don't even have to go like that. You just hold it up and cut through. Self and other. So it turns out that we're doing not three yanas in any strict order, but the three yanas go through each and every single talk we're doing here. And that's as it should be. It doesn't mean at some point it would make a lot of sense to go back and review and study the Hinayana for its own sake, and we can do that at some point. But right now, we're charging forward. So in this earlier version of this talk, in which he said sex, well, really love. And then he said, ultimately, it's about passion. Now, what does that mean? This is an astonishing proclamation, really. Because all the other defilements that we can think of, our anger, our greed, our envy, pride, even ignorance, are self-limiting. They can only go so far. But passion is the nature of the world and has no limits. In other words, it's not just a klesha to be discarded. It is the passion is the ground of reality, and she is also the feminine principle.
Are you just going to let him say that?
Listen to the rest of what he has to say about it.
But maybe do people have observations or questions at this point?
Well, if they have, they should ask them.
I don't think he said that. Did he say anything about feminine principle? Did I just read right past it?
It's actually in this more expanded talk, so I do have to read it. Passion is the mother of all and the ground of wisdom. Her nature is to know all and explore all with unbound inquisitiveness. Passion is as far as the world can go. And she is the feminine principle. She is the mother. And we sit in the lap of wisdom and have never departed from her. The masculine principle is called skillful means. By the way, the Sanskrit word for the mother principle is prajna, as in prajna paramita. And the masculine principle is called upaya. You don't particularly have to know that, but they do have those names. And what we are dealing with here is the union of the feminine and masculine principle within our own nature. nowhere else, out, there's nowhere else to go in the world. And that is why passion is so primordial. So wisdom is not just a state of blankness. I think we've said that many times before. It is completely filled with energy. And Trungpa declares in this and elsewhere in his teachings, and other tantric teachers do also, that it has two basic characteristics. It has heat and it has directionality. The heat is what element? Fire. It has the element fire, and it's going to go somewhere, which is the element of air or wind. And actually, the feminine principle holds all the elements. She is all the elements, but these two in particular, she's holding, and they have to go somewhere. The heat and the wind cannot be contained. It cannot be bound at all. And the masculine principle is, which is skillful means, has a function. Its function is to direct the wild energy of the feminine principle into the channels of practicality. In other words, we have unlimited passion, and then we have what is the skillful way to handle it.
And that's so sexist and condescending. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think I'll say that. Women have yes, the passion, is, that feeling, undirected, and
it is so
hysterical mind.
It is so sexist,
yeah, totally,
that it's beyond being sexist.
Well, there's also like passion is a pleasure, and skillful means like, oh, I'm going to do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to see that there are plenty of problems.
Right.
But that is the basic theme, that because it has passion has nowhere to go except inevitably to take its, for the heat to manifest and to take its direction, and prajna has nothing to do except to direct it into practicality. They have to, something has to happen, and because the filter of ego, if, or whatever we want to call it, ignorance, may try to interrupt or change the direction of this, but ultimately it's going to fail, and the wisdom will go where it's going to go, no matter what ego does. And that is why the Vajrayana is called the indestructible jnana. It is so fundamental that it cannot be destroyed, it cannot be perverted, it will do what it's going to do. Another word for this is adamantine jnana, diamond jnana. So this energy, of course, is filtered through our ignorance, our kleshas, our limitations, our ignorance, our confusion, whatever we're going to call it. But it's beyond the ability of any form of ego to contain it. Eventually, it will take its course no matter what ego does. What does ego want to do? Well, it wants to own this energy, basically. It wants to take it, it wants to appropriate it. And there's an amazing analogy here, which is, imagine two people walking down High Street, and these are the two approaches. The first one, not bound by ego, is going down High Street, and there are all these shops. Oh, look at those beautiful jewels in that window. They are so wonderful. And then it goes on and says, those pastries are so delicious, and the candy is so delicious, and that perfume is so delicious. It is wonderful. And look at that gorgeous male model in the window. He is so sexy. He's smiling. He is so seductive. He's beautiful. And so this is one way of going down High Street, looking in the window. The other way is to look in the window and see, what did we start with? Some wonderful jewels. I would like to have those jewels. But I don't have enough money. And I don't have enough money. I'm feeling bad. I'm feeling depressed. And I don't really want to admit that. So I'm going to get angry because I can't get what I want. But I don't like being angry, so I'm going to not really admit I'm angry. I'm going to just put up some pride and try to bluff my way through it. Ignore that I feel so envious, ignore that I feel so stupid. So that's another way to do it, to try to own each thing as opposed to pure appreciation of everything that we encounter. That's kind of a really fascinating.
The other side is, I have a lot of money. I can buy that and impress all my people.
Yeah, right. That's another approach.
Or why didn't they buy it for me?
Why did they buy it for me? I mean, that is what we do.
Yeah, I'm going
to
go buy it.
So if you say to that guy in the window, oh, he's trying to seduce me, and you just get pleasure out of that and keep on walking, is that okay, or is that not ego?
Well, ultimately,
it depends if he asks for your phone number.
It depends on if you give it to him.
Yeah,
indeed.
That came up in another discussion group, as I remember. Yeah, how are we going to react? Yeah.
The closest analogy I have for myself is fire breathing, which is ironically is wind, air,
yeah,
and the flame. And the last two times I was performing, I was in high wind situations, which generally you have to be really careful. And one was in a parade. And you have to be prepared to just not do it, because the wind is precarious. Mm-hmm. It will shift immediately. And you don't ever want to blow as red as the wind shifts. So you have to be so in the moment, and you have to let go of your desire to breathe that fire.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And just wait. And if it's not there, it's not there. And I haven't personally seen, but I've heard of people who didn't wait and who really wanted to show their stuff, and they paid for it. So, so it's actually an exercise in just letting go of your desire and just waiting and seeing if it's right to do it.
And getting burned is a message, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is.
Yeah.
I've cinched some
eyebrows. Are you letting go of your desire, or are you including that in a larger picture? I really want to do this, and the timing is terrible right now. I still want to do it.
Yeah, I'd say so, because there's the pressure that people are expecting it,
yeah,
but you
yeah.
have to simply let go of
You don't want to disappoint people.
Yes.
You want to do it because it's, you know, great.
Well, it's a juice. I mean, it's like a rush to do it, you know. Yeah. But if you attach yourself to that feeling, you're going to be in a lot of danger.
So
and the people
around.
What do
you call that then? The assessment you go through.
Well, and it's not an intellectual assessment.
No, but I mean, you're discriminating. Obviously, you're not just sort of whole
right.
hog, regardless,
no.
Ignoring the factors that are environmental factors.
Right.
So you could say that's a combination of prajna and skillful means, because the skillful means also knows when not to do something,
right.
And as well as knowing what to do and when to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So the analogy goes so far, but
it's just an analogy.
What I think is being brought up here is the whole notion of prajna as being the inner condition of fire. And that's somewhat distinct from just desire, which is more fickle.
Mm-hmm.
And Rinpoche, in fact, one of the first things Trungpa Rinpoche said when somebody asked him what's reincarnation, he just said it's fickleness.
Mm-hmm. Fickleness.
So, you know.
So I see that many people have books here, which is wonderful. And this is a juicy chapter full of interesting practicalities. And I'm wondering if anyone would like to start, just go through it, study, take this chapter, and find something, maybe a little earlier, and then we'll go pick up something. What would someone like to pick up and look at, read, discuss? This is about relationship, about how relationships work and how they don't work. So it's immensely useful and grounded.
I think, on page 87, I remember I started getting a little confused when that paragraph that begins with but. But when this heat is filtered through ego, do you see that, Michael?
Yeah. So read it, talk about it.
Yeah. But when this heat is filtered through ego, it becomes stagnant because we ignore the basic ground, refuse to see the vast space in which this energy occurs. Then the energy cannot flow freely in the open space shared with the object of passion. Instead, it is solidified, narrowed, and directed by the central headquarters of ego to move outward in order to draw the object of passion into its territory. This captive energy extends out to its object and then returns to be programmed again. We extend our tentacles and try to fix our relationship. This attempt to cling to the situation makes the communication process superficial. We just touch another person's surface and get stuck there, never experiencing their whole being. We are blinded by our clinging. The object of passion, instead of being bathed in the intense warmth of free passion, feels oppressed by the stifling heat of neurotic passion.
You didn't understand that?
Well,
I started to get confused.
I remember finding that confused.
Was there a specific sentence that sort of baffled you? Or just sort of felt that you...
The word stagnant, you didn't really...
Oh, starting from the beginning. Okay.
Yeah. But when this heat is filtered through ego, it becomes stagnant.
So what do you think that refers to? He defined the heat of passion as being boundless. It's just open, and it's all
right.
Pervasive.
What are we doing here?
Maybe it just gets stuck.
Well, what are we doing?
We're talking.
I want him, mm-hmm. right, or her, or it, or, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what this is about?
Grasping. Yeah.
What's that?
Grasping.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I'm confused. Could you give a definition of passion in this case? Mm-hmm. That's just... confusing.
In some ultimate sense?
No, how he's using it.
In this case, this is an example of passion being becoming grasping, right?
But is passion, you know, like the male and female, is it passion emptiness and compassion? Or is, I'm confused, is it like, you know, you said desire?
Okay, well, taking it from the ego side, then passion is the wantingness here.
But then there seems to be a good passion and a bad passion. Yeah, what about the free passion, yes.
Yeah.
What is free passion? Is that...
love.
Like emptiness? Is that dhammadhatu? Is that just everything that's there? You know what I mean? Is he just saying that?
One word answer is yes, but I think we need to explain it a little bit.
You know what I mean? Is it just another way of saying?
Jim. He talks later about radiation without irradiating.
Yeah.
And it is that free, we'll call it the free flow of energy. We can talk about warmth. We can talk about heat. We can talk about. We get glimpses of that in our daily life, but we're just feeling relaxed and sort of sweet. And that sort of just goes out toward our world. And we do that a lot. And it makes us want to get out of bed in the morning. And we can screw it up.
So what you just said is free passion.
Yeah.
And then when the ego tries to apply it, it becomes the opposite of free passion.
It becomes
confining it.
Confining.
Trying to capture something and trying to confine it, yeah. Trying to lock it, trying to get a death grip. You're getting it, putting it into a box, something that can't be put into a box. That's what the stagnation is about, because you're trying to hold something that by nature is completely naturally free. And so when that happens, there's no circulation, right? It just sort of bogs down, right?
The back and forth is
there's no back and forth.
Right.
That's right.
There's no exchange.
Or what we do is we try to define things, then we're basically trying to fish somebody in. And he says it becomes superficial because it's all referred here. It's sort of like being an adolescent. Remember being an adolescent, you like somebody and then you go through all kinds of crap. Because you're feeling just completely self-conscious. What does this mean about me? She doesn't like me. She likes me. All that stuff that we continue to do past adolescence. But I think there are some periods in our lives where we really know that neurotic side very well. Mm-hmm. And there are other times where that we can experience more of that free flow without being self-conscious. More interested in sort of that than this.
Does passion just have to apply to people, or is it any
jewelry, mannequin,
anything,
Mozart,
power, music? Yeah. Whatever we desire.
Whatever you want.
Whatever we desire.
I want to test.
So all those things, how would there be free passion?
I really want to
just
test
all those things you said. Jewelry, money, power.
Wouldn't that be if you're just enjoying it? And not owning it?
Well, that's what I'm asking. I don't know.
And not wanting it?
There's so many things that are beautiful, that are enjoyable, that we could find wonderful.
So just kind of let go and...
A lover? The sky?
Let it be.
Try not to control it.
Let everything be. I mean, we continue to come back to this notion of letting be, right?
Yeah. Isn't it kind of like trying to grab a hold of water? I mean, you really can't grab water. It just goes...
We think we can.
So, I know, we do. Yeah. We think we can, but the moment we grab it, it's not there anymore. So it's really... It's not that passion when you try to contain it. If you...
Right.
It's something else. It's not that anymore.
It becomes demonic, he says, in that chapter.
That's just very mundane thought, but just kind of...
It should be mundane, exactly.
Of, like, being somewhere, like, maybe staying at... sort of very expensive, fancy bed and breakfast kind of place, you know, in the ocean, wherever. And the thought, oh, wouldn't it be cool to own this? And then within a minute, I think, own it. Can you imagine what the mortgage would be? And then it's just so much nicer just to experience it without any, you know, ownership.
I bicycle by some really nice houses in Narragansett Shore. And I do the same thing. I say, what a beautiful house. I really just enjoy being there. And every once in a while, it's like, wouldn't it be interesting to live in it? Then I say, I'd have to pay the taxes.
Right. And everything else. Right.
Better to have the free flow of love.
Is there an analogy?
What did you just do when you started with enjoying where you were, mm-hmm. right? Simply accepting it on its own terms.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the next thing you're doing is turning it into an object of figuring out what you're going to do about owning it.
Right.
And then it becomes no longer fun. It becomes a project, which, you know, you can easily talk yourself out of for practical purposes.
Right.
Unless you're really indulgent.
I find that happens whenever the word if comes in. If I did this, if this was that, if is always something other than what it is.
Beware those counterfactuals.
Yeah.
But there's some things that people that feel more necessary. In other words, this house that you don't have anyway, you kind of know you don't really need it. But there are other things that feel more necessary. Like if somebody's hungry and they don't have food or...
Yeah, that could even be the case. But you could be grasping onto food too.
If you're hungry and you need food, you want to have food, but then not get obsessed by the thought of needing it, I guess.
I think that's different. If you're hungry, your body requires food.
Right.
Yeah,
we don't care. I mean, I don't know about you, but when I'm really hungry, I'll eat a little bag of potato chips I ordinarily would scoff at.
Yeah, but sometimes you really got to have lobster, right?
That's harsh.
but there's an issue there when you're growing up between want and what you actually need.
Yeah, right.
So those are two different animals.
Right.
Also, if you're sitting on a meditation cushion and you're saying, I need food, that's there isn't going to be food there. It's kind of fantasy. It's unnecessary at that point because you can't produce the food.
You can only think, I need to move my foot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can move your foot because it is just that you could do.
Of course, the greatest distortion of passion is addiction, where there's the wantingness and the pain, emotional, physical, happening at the same time. Where everything, the entire world is told is like ice cold frozen.
Addiction is a terrible grasping. And then people who are addicted to alcohol or something like that try to throw it off, and then they come, then a little while later the grasping comes back and they're out in the drinking again, and they can do it over and over again despite all their resolutions.
Because reality's been frozen.
Right, it's there. Is concretize a word?
Solidify,
thank you. They're solidifying and making permanent the feeling that they want to get away from. And there's a false belief that this is not going to change. There's going to be no change here. I'm drowning in this. I can't get out of it. Nothing's going to change. And so it's trying to do anything to get away from that feeling.
But I think that we have to be careful about this particular term, addiction, because if you're addicted to drugs, which could happen, it could happen harmlessly, you didn't even know any better, you're actually being possessed by something that is actually not natural to yourself. And that is really a clinical problem. It's not just a psychological problem. Mm-hmm. You're not just going to overcome it by making resolutions and thinking of yourself through it or something, or rationalizing it. It's far deeper than that in terms of its grip on you. So, that's more of a medical issue versus... I think for some people, alcohol is also similar to that, where it's just not possible for them to overcome the entrapment they have with that particular...
I think it's more the path to addiction, because this generally addiction doesn't happen instantly. Although there are some drugs that are so powerful that they can do that.
So on the next page, what's this about one's becoming a demon to someone else? What's going on there?
I have a question before we
yeah.
go further. Isn't that an excuse to actually avoid relationships?
Which is?
The fear of clinging. Then you just
yeah, yes, of course. There's one, there's the clinging of grasping. There's the, yeah, and there's the opposite. That is fear of getting into a relationship because you don't want to cling. That's a flip form of it. Yeah, sure.
So what's the middle way?
So
have you not
claimed
but be in a relationship?
Isn't that all of it? Right there. That's it, right
we
there.
All have our
we have been studying that previously when we discussed the Nidanas. I mean, part of the practice of meditation helps us understand, beginning to see where we work with the craving and grasping, that link, where we can actually see it occur in ourselves, and we can actually insert some sense of letting it go, letting be. That's the key point in the Hinayana practice.
Keeping it free, still, leading to the free part of it is
keeping it open. Yeah. Open. So, yeah, one could reject a relationship because you don't want to be owned either. You don't want to have a sense of being trapped by somebody else's projections and their expectations. On the one hand, and on the other hand, you could be on the other side wanting that same kind of performance from the other person where they would fulfill that need for you to be able to be held within their grasp. So we're looking at this, working on both sides of the coin.
Yes, it's interesting. Trungpa Rinpoche, unlike a lot of other teachers, really encourages students to get into relationships. And the reason is that relationships hold a very good mirror of ourselves. Mm. We see the whole thing in our behavior and in how other people respond to us. And there's chaos and enlightenment there. And so there's a sense of sort of diving into something. And yes, there's passion, there's joy, there may also be clinging. You discover that. It's not that there's something simple about clinging. It's something we all do. But, you know, eventually we sort of begin to work it out over time. And so this is not an invitation to either be flagrantly with everybody or simply isolated. But, you know, there has to be a free flow of energy. And we find out very well how we interrupt that.
So what happens, this whole way through communication might produce a problem. What is that? If we want to go there, it's top of page 88 in my...
How's the paragraph start?
Well, they're talking about seeing through
this
somebody.
This whole way through communication might produce a problem.
Supposing
you see right through someone and that person does not want you to see right through and becomes horrified with you and runs away.
I think that's a message from the universe.
It's not the right relationship.
Be together.
Does everyone have the place?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
Hey, Jamie.
That's right.
Does that have to do with lack of skillful means?
Well, what's it saying?
When you communicated,
yeah.
You blew it, you're one chance for it?
I don't know if it's one chance.
That's what we talked about, right?
It's not, I don't whether it's one chance or not, someone doesn't want your approach and runs away. So what does that mean? What happens? If it's right there.
We want to read the rest of the paragraph.
that's his way of communicating.
Okay, someone read it, please.
From which point?
Suppose you see the right through someone and that person does not want you to see right through and becomes horrified with you and runs away. Then what do? You have made your communication completely and thoroughly. If that person runs away from you, that is his way of communicating with you. You would not investigate further. If you did pursue and chase him, then sooner or later you would become a demon from that person's point of view. You see right through his body and he has juicy fat and meat that you would like to eat up, so you seem like a vampire to him. Whoa.
So what does that imply for us who could be in that situation? I mean, discussing this in terms of communications or genuine, honest interactions with others.
On which side?
Indeed.
Take either side.
I'll be the vampire.
Go ahead.
Well, doesn't it again come down to skillful means or seeing, self-evaluating and seeing what you're doing? And
in other words, your means wasn't so skillful.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. It's as simple as that.
But you're just going to be a victim of it yourself and the other person if you're not able to see it.
Right, so hopefully
you don't know
you're
doing
now, right?
What?
Hopefully you learn the second time, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's no guarantee that we're going to be successful with everyone we meet. Right? Mm-hmm. It's not like we're supposed to be successful with every communication.
Mm-hmm. So there's an acceptance in this as well.
Yeah.
You know, that maybe that person wasn't interested in the first place.
It's like online dating, basically. When was this written?
Doesn't it feel like he's talking to a bunch of teenagers?
Yeah.
Huh? You think you're much
teenagers?
Do you really feel you're more sophisticated?
No, but just the way he's talking about it.
Yeah.
He's introducing a topic that no one else really approached this way.
Yeah.
Nobody talked about passion, and most Buddhists, particularly Buddhist lamas or Buddhist teachers, do not talk about passion as something fundamentally central to one's life, as some kind of essential quality or core quality. They're always traditionally talk about how eschew it, you know, get it under control, put it out there, put some boundaries on it, and keep your passion as minimal as possible. Whereas he is saying, he's speaking very differently. And this was very consistent throughout his teaching about passion, which goes further than only talking about how to behave in our interactions with others, about the whole fundamental basis of life itself, which is really quite profound.
He says that the sense of humor seems to be, not on this, maybe I can explain this too, a sense of humor seems to be what's lacking in all this.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, so I don't understand what that means.
Well, what do you think?
When you're in the vampire role, or you're seeing yourself, or you're seeing through this person, you've got it all figured out,
or the other side of it,
yeah.
The other person feeling victimized, chased.
Yeah. So I guess if you can just see that you're ridiculous, and how maybe tragic, comic you are, or something, then it dissipates it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
You might have you let off the gas a little bit.
One thing Kondra Rinpoche would say that I always got a chuckle out of, she said, when we're trying to liberate sentient beings, we're trying to liberate them from ourselves. So if you're feeling particularly enlightened and you want to go share that with somebody, just remember that, you know, they may not take it the way you'd like them to take it. And so the best thing to keep in mind is just liberate them from you. Yeah. And I love that saying, but I kind of think of it this way. This is a great example. I mean, if you go right out there and pierce right through somebody's neuroses to get right to the point, and they go off terrified, what did you just do for them?
Warned them off.
Well, I can assure you there were plenty of people who were terrified by Trungpa Rinpoche when he actually went, and Khandra Rinpoche. If we want to talk about people being freaked out and bolting, when she gets penetrating, people just want to head for the door because she is so probing and so absolutely sharp. Mm. I mean, unbelievable razor, edge, knife, you know. And I've been in her presence when people got up and left because it was just too much for them to deal with. So, you know, it's not like all these lamas are successful because they got it figured out with everybody, because some people really aren't ready to get those messages.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean the message is wrong.
Yeah. And being speared by the guru, people often come back to the guru if they're too terrified.
Because they
actually sense that the guru really is holding wisdom.
As I say, when I was reading it, it felt like, you know, when you read something and you have a feeling, and they're saying, oh, this is how the world is, and you get the feeling, there might be some truth in that, but they're really talking about some issue they have. Mm-hmm. I got that feeling from that. The other thing I want to say is, it sounds like, so it was written in 76, right? Sorry. So that might have been new for Buddhists, but all of psychology was talking about this at that time. So it's not like new, it's just that maybe it was new for Buddhists to be.
It was actually prior to 76. 76 was when it was published.
Okay, well,
probably 72,
just the 60s, you know, the whole gestalt. I mean, obviously everyone's influenced by everything.
It was in the air.
I mean, it's not like brand new. I mean, well, nothing is new under the sun.
This isn't brand new.
Yeah, but anyway, no, you said no one was talking about it, but maybe no Buddhists were talking about it.
I think that's what I was trying to get at with it. It was not what traditional Buddhist teachers would be, just how they would put things.
Mm-hmm. It seems to me he was trying to shock. There's some shock in that whole chapter.
There's a lot of shock in that. But he's not,
he was trying, I don't know.
He's not just trying to shock, he was trying to shock you into moving beyond what is shocking to you.
Yeah, I think, though, you messed it up a bit. I'd like to...
Well, that's okay, I'm messing
up. I'd like to say, on another page, I'd just like to somehow bring it in, like way over in 133... Page 133, he ends a paragraph or something with, well, they're talking about the spiritual friend and the love between the spiritual friend and the guru, I guess you would say guru and person. And he says, well, the whole thing's about insulting the
ego.
He's
insulting. He said again. He also said at one point, compassion is not being polite to ego.
Yeah. So it seems to me to be a shock statement, because it was also referenced as love. He was talking about love in the book. It's in the index.
And that's love.
So
that's real love.
I guess tough love.
Tough love. You bet.
Yes, I mean...
But it seemed to me his approach was the shock, too.
Not only shock. He was just saying what he needed to say, and some people felt it was shocking, but I don't think he was intentionally trying to shock people.
About a year ago, we used a book, What Makes You Not a Buddhist, by... what's his name?
Dongpa Khyentse Rinpoche.
Yeah.
About 3 years ago,
Was it that long ago? Okay, so I don't know how many of you were here, but... we who are teaching it got up every day and at the meeting and produced a bit of this, and everyone got hitting back at us. He is insulting us. It happened every single time, over and over and over again. He is insulting us. He's making fun of us.
Do you remember that?
People
who are here? Yeah. I mean, they felt personally assaulted by these simple statements about how we behave and how we think.
When I went to London to see Khandra Rinpoche the first time, and I was instructed by Bridge on how to write a note to ask for audience with her. And so I did. And word got around that an American's coming to London to see Khandra Rinpoche. And the note had been passed up to her, and I was told that, hang out, maybe she'll see you. I thought, okay. And then in the talk, and I was sitting in a great seat, like smack in front of her.
Uh-oh.
She looks awesome. And she's talking, and she talks about the guru. And she said, I get a lot of notes asking for a private audience. Don't do that. And she was looking right at me. She goes, it's just useless. There's no reason for it. I'm either your guru or you're not, or I'm not. Just it's useless. And I'm like, at first I'm like, and then I started laughing. I couldn't help it. I actually just started laughing. I thought that was so awesome. Just to call it out right there in front of everyone. It was just, it. I was delighted by it. She looked at me, she started laughing. And then at the end, you know, I thought, okay, that's cool. I'm not going to say it, but this is enough. That's all right. Then she called me up to talk to me. So and she said, like, for a good 20 minutes, we sat and chatted.
And
did she talk about
me? She just asked about me and what I'm doing, what's my practice like.
She want to learn fire breathing, maybe?
So it was a very easy conversation. It wasn't particularly deep on anything, but she has specifics about my practice and this group and the other group that I go to and who I'm studying with, and she had a great comment about who I should study what from. Because this person's more traditional, this person's a little more relaxed. You study this from both of them, you'll get a good idea. So, but I thought that was just, I was like, this is my teacher right here. Mm-hmm. She just called right out in front. So, but talk about penetrating, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
One of the things I hoped we could do, but it seems like we're running out of time, is to talk about path. And we don't need to spend a lot of time with it because we recite it at the beginning of every, if you arrive on time, that is, every meeting.
We do.
Every time we talk about the path, and it's a practical path. Grant your blessing so that my mind may be one with the Dharma. Which means we're here for some reason. Something draws us here. Like you come here because you want to disagree with us or something like that. But something brings you here, for sure, because there's a problem with just ignoring our situation and waiting until we die and finding that we're unfulfilled and it's frustrating. Something brings us here. And at that point, it can make a lot of sense to actually do some studying to make our life one with the Dharma. And when we start to do that, it then turns out that the project is so much bigger than we thought. And grant your blessing. You notice that they're linked. Grant your blessing so that the path may clarify confusion. Grant your blessing so that Dharma may progress along the
path.
I skipped it, okay. So, the second one. It's that we can't just decide what we're going to study. The Dharma has to take over and move us along the path. We have to be more humble and more open than we first thought in order to actually start to get into Dharma with any depth. And then we having worked with it, having seen that there is such a thing as working with our study of Buddhist Dharma or Christian Dharma or atheist Dharma or whatever Dharma we're going to work with, we start to get a sense that maybe realization goes beyond that into some realm beyond anything about our opinions. Grant your blessings so that the path may clarify confusion. So we'd like to actually start to work on it. How can we clarify this confused mind? How can we go beyond all its noise? And then we get to spill the beans, which is where you came in at the beginning. Grant your blessings so that confusion may dawn as wisdom. And that's really the end point, in a sense.
Realization.
Yes, and...
Do people here understand that? I mean, mm-hmm.
None of us understand it. I can assure you that none of us understand it. I assure you that you don't understand it.
I wonder if anybody thinks they understand.
But is this the same confusion as the four kayas?
Well, okay, yes.
We'll rewind and listen to that talk again.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very short answer is yes.
Yeah.
Long answer is that talk.
But some sense that confusion itself, I mean, we talked about earlier in our studies with us, talking about the skandhas, we talked about how each of the skandhas represented patterns of confusion and delusion. And at the same time, as we begin to go further into understanding the nature of the skandhas, we begin to realize they are fundamentally Buddha nature itself. And so that is where wisdom actually can be begun to be understood or begin to be acknowledged. And so we don't view what arises in our experience as just somehow inconvenient, but actually a direct expression of wisdom.
Mm-hmm. Would we be up to actually trying it for a minute, see if we can be the mother of all and the wisdom that's within our own mind beyond, we don't know who we're supplicating, we don't know, we know so little. We could do it for maybe a minute. So it helps to be in a good meditation posture. Grant your blessings so that confusion may dawn as wisdom. If we're going to do these things, it's good not to try it for too long, because it will wear out. So, does anyone want to say anything?
What were we supposed to be doing? Trying to be a mother?
What were we supposed to be doing?
Yes, I missed it. I said it.
Oh.
Oh, what did you think you were supposed to be doing?
I don't know. I heard something about being the mother and also something else at the same time. And then I didn't.
Being the wisdom and what I said. And words are never adequate here, okay? So that's why we don't get it. We produce more words.
Were we supposed to be being the wisdom and the confusion? Or?
Yeah, or the wisdom and the skillful needs.
So I have some homework that may help. Over the next week, you should love a lot of people. Intelligently. Just love a lot of people. Don't worry about doing or not doing or complicating or what does this mean about me or any of that crap. Just love a lot of people and see what happens. And next week, Mike, we'll talk about Mahayana. But let yourself, you know, love freely.
It's a warm assignment in general.
It's a good assignment.
Eminently practical.
Well, really practical, but don't worry about it.
Just start. I think that's the part. Just be open, open and warm, and a willingness to be basically open and friendly without worrying about the consequences or where that's supposed to go.
And things will happen. You know, you see parts that you don't like. Who cares? Don't worry about that stuff. That's for later. It's not important. You know, the petty things we do are just petty things we do.
Good idea.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Everyone.
Thank you.